open the House Committee on Business and Labor. And I'm going to open a...
Do you want to do this first, or do you want to...
Oh, forgive me. Yeah, I've got people get here. I'm going to open a work session for the introduction of measures LC-1485.
Yes, Mr. Chair. LC-1485 is relating to payment of insurance claims, and it's the only concept that we have in front of us this morning.
I'd entertain a motion. Thank you. Representative Escobar.
Yes, I move the LC-1485 be a committee bill.
Mr. Representative Escobar moves LC-1485 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion or opposition? And for the record, this does not commit any of us to a vote yes or no on this. We're just making it a bill. Any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. I'm going to open a... Open a work session on House Bill 2540.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill, we heard House Bill 2540 at Wednesday's hearing. We were waiting for the revenue analysis on the bill. There's no revenue impact. House Bill 2540 repeals ORS 657506, which relates to reports and taxes for musicians under contract and the applicability of unemployment insurance tax.
Thank you. I would entertain a motion for House Bill 2540. Representative Matthews.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to make a motion that House Bill 2540 be passed with a due pass recommendation from the committee to the House floor.
Representative Matthews moves House Bill 2540 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion, comments, concerns, questions? Is there any opposition to this bill? Representative 2540, the position bill.
I'm fine.
All right. Well, seeing no opposition, so moved. Do you think Representative Shields would like to carry
this? Yes, he's a chief sponsor, Mr. Chair.
So be it then. Okay. I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2501.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2501 requires the Department of State Police to establish base pay for troopers and establishes that the chart must be established no later than January 1st, 2015. You have in front of you a -2 amendment which replaces the language of the bill. It amends a statute dealing with arbitration procedures for public employee collective bargaining agreements to use the term comparable in regards to comparable compensation for Department of State Police troopers. The term it must include the base pay for city police officers employed by the five most populous cities in Oregon. And the amendment also establishes an operational date of January 1st, 2013.
Thank you. I'm going to call Jeff Lady from the State Police Union and Brian DeLashmit. My good friend, Representative Andy Olson. Representative, whenever you're ready, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I just want to thank you for coming in and just shedding sunshine on this committee.
Thank you. Wow. Of course, if you're a member of Judiciary, we get to go out to DPSST and qualify later today. So
I saw that.
You're not a member of that. So.
And that is a disappointment.
So we'll have fun.
Good luck. Thank
you. You think you'll make it this time, Representative?
I'm going to have to call this committee to order. If anybody...
I would like to talk to that representative. Anyways, Mr. Chair and Committee, thank you for this opportunity to come before you this morning. This House bill, this is actually the third time that this building has seen this. I introduced the concept back in 2005 in the last session and again this time. But the idea behind it is there is a serious problem, and I can share that from you from my personal experience, that when you have a situation with a pay equity at a specific time period in a law enforcement specifically, and for the state police specifically at the five-year mark, you see members starting to look at other agencies that are paying anywhere from $300+ more. And as a result, you'll spend thousands of dollars for the 18-month period of training during the probationary period. They stay with the agency for 5 years, and then all of a sudden start looking elsewhere because they can make a lot more money. So that's the reason behind this bill. It actually creates a situation and allows the state police to be a lot more involved for competition for keeping members. And that's what I would really like to have you consider as you move forward with this bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Leedy. I'm the president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. I passed out a compensation, a couple of charts here, and what it will show is that the 10 years of service level, we were roughly 3.1% behind the local jurisdictions that we've mentioned here. Currently, and what this bill will do is, in the event that we end up in a binding arbitration situation during contract negotiations, which happens occasionally, it's happening less frequently these days, that the arbitrator will use in-state comparables for our offer rather than the five western states that they currently use, which are Washington, California, Idaho, Nevada, and New Mexico. Only one of those states is a collective bargaining state. They all have different tax bases. They all have different economies. And they all have different police agencies. Some are highway patrols, some are state patrols. The only two that are state police agencies are New Mexico and Idaho. We have a real problem in recruiting because we are actually competing against Eugene, Portland, Gresham, Hillsborough, and Salem, and we all want the same person. We all want the best person that we can hire. I'll give you an example. About a year ago, we had a recruit that we had hired, and he went on his first day at DPSST and on the basic training. He quit our department, came back after lunch in the same DPSST class wearing an Oregon City PD uniform, came back with a $300 a month raise, and he's never going to move. He's not going to Lakeview or someplace he doesn't want to go, or Portland. He's going to spend his entire career in Oregon City. Whereas in our department, you can spend a few years in Lakeview, you can spend a few years in Ontario, you can spend a few years in Albany, and
God bless Albany. We love Albany.
Great Albany.
There are some terrible places, even in Oregon. Can you imagine?
You got my vote.
Convince me.
You need to be able to compete regionally, locally, with in-state, other in-state agencies. This does not automatically raise our salaries to that of a Portland PD officer. What it does is allows it, if we happen to end up in a binding arbitration, that the arbiter uses those agencies to compare our wages with rather than Idaho. Thank you.
Thank you. Brian, go ahead.
For the record, Brian DeLashmet, representing the Oregon State Police Officers Association. I just have a couple of comments. This bill, obviously, is more, and for those freshmen who are on the committee, I don't know if you've seen a gut and stuff to this point, but a gut and stuff basically refers to delete the entire content of the bill and replace it with something else. This is a gut and stuff, but it's a gut and stuff with the exact same intent or end of the road process as the original bill. The original bill actually set up a process in which OSP set the base pay based upon those five comparables. This just alters that, deletes that entire language, and says that they negotiate, OSP negotiates with OSPOA, and at the end of the road, if it in fact goes to an arbitration, and let me back up for just a minute for those that don't know that police and fire in the state, the strike barred type of employees, which is police and fire and corrections, they cannot strike. So the end of the road for them is that they can't get an agreement, they go to arbitration. So the arbiter then rules on the packages. This just sets up the process in which if they can't come to an agreement, the arbiter looks at the in-state comparables rather than the out-of-state comparables. Mr. Leedy has laid out the problem that they have with being compared to other states. You've seen the chart, although the chart is not as dramatic as it was last 2 years ago. At that point, it was 13% to 14% behind those same comparables. So what we're asking for is just establishing in-state comparables because that's where your recruits, that's where your workforce is coming from. And with that, we'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there Representative Penimer, Representative Esquivel, Representative Witt.
I just wanted to ask Representative Olson if this was an effort to get a pay increase to come to the legislature.
Well, the transfer was, I just heard this about the transfer because of the low wages.
I'm and
I
just
just like him.
That's
get serious here, folks. Just like me. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. On this, why did we pick the five most, quote, populous cities? Why didn't we pick the five cities that had the highest pay scale? Because you're still competing. It doesn't matter whether you're competing with a Portland or a Oregon City. You're still competing with the person that has the highest market value they put on their force.
Chair Schaffer, Representative Esquivel, members of the committee. These five agencies here represent pretty much the top of the scale. There are other agencies that occasionally will fall above that. The Bend Police Department, for an example, depending on where their contract is and where Portland's contract is, can sometimes rise above that. These are generally the five highest paying and largest agencies. If I might add something, right now we're weathering a storm, and hopefully, you know, after this next biennium that doesn't appear to be much better, we're not going to be hiring anybody. So in three to 3.5 years, we are again going to enter a hiring frenzy, just like we did 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, where we're and everybody was looking for police officers, and we were all competing. You know, we weren't sending people there, but other agencies were sending people to the East Coast to recruit, to Hawaii to recruit. And we are all going to be competing for that same person. That's the person you want, you know, want wearing a campaign hat out on the road. We want the best person we can find. So it's going to happen again.
I look forward to that day.
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, one of the questions that would come to my mind is, why didn't you set up a process that evaluates what are the five highest paid in the state and then use that as the comparables, but that would be changing constantly based upon negotiations and the timing of contracts and so forth. So what they attempted to do here is pick the five largest as far as manpower. They happen to likely be those that are at the top of the scale, as Jeff Leedy has indicated, but you could set up a process that says every year you evaluate who's the five highest paid, and then if you ever go to arbitration, then you use those. That wasn't our intent. Our intent was to try and figure out where's the pool and how's the pool moving, and these five were the logical ones.
Thank you. Representative Witt, Cameron, then Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a commentary. I think that our state police are an elite group of law enforcement officials, and I think that's a job that every law enforcement officer in this state ought to aspire to. And I'm very concerned, Mr. Chairman, that a minimum $300 a month compensation differential is going to seriously impact our ability to continue to be able to hire the very best.
I agree with that. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions just in regards. First of all, Jeff, maybe I want to just clarify on this handout that you gave us. The first one is a five-year service comparison, and it shows us at 9.8% below the average. The second one, you said we were below by 3.1. The way I read this, it shows it that we were at 10 years of service, we're above the market average by 3.1%.
Mm-hmm. That's correct at this point in our contract.
Okay.
Excuse me, Representative Cameron. Churchhoffer. And the reason for the anomaly in the five-year is that our troopers do not top out in the salary range until 8 years, while almost every other agency in the state topped out in 5 years. It was something, quite frankly, we were hoping to try to correct in this contract that we're currently in negotiation with.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that showed that. And then the second question is, in the bill itself that we're gutting and stuffing. The base pay, and I want to just make sure that's clear on page, it's like on page 3 of the amendment, line 6, is the base pay considered overall compensation? Is that what will be used in the comparison?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, I believe that that, in fact, is the case even with the chart here. Is you're talking, I mean, obviously, if the city of Portland pays more on health insurance than the state does, and that's the balance of the total benefit package. So it's my understanding that it would be the total compensation package.
Thank you.
You would have, in bargaining, you would have the flexibility to say, we'll forego 2% if the state's going to pick up more health insurance. So it's not just the pay itself, and that's a helpful clarification.
Thank you. Representative Matthews.
I guess, thank you, Mr. Chair. My comment is first, Representative Olson, thanks for being here. I think it shows great character for you to stand up and defend the men and women of OSP. You're retired now, and just shows that you're always part of the group, so thanks for being here and supporting the effort. In terms of, you know, this isn't just about recruitment, this is also about retention. There's a lot of effort that goes in. In fact, as I do my 57-mile travel, I see the backs of the cars now. You're actually recruiting on every vehicle, asking people to get to the website to apply. So for me, my big concern is in the retention of your employees, too. A lot of effort goes recruiting these fine men and women. A lot goes into their academy and their training, a tremendous amount, and it's a huge impact when these folks leave for other agencies, whether it's in their first year, 2 years, or 3 years. And so I am in full support of this effort, and I thank you for that. I do want to also say that it has been a trend, just in response to Representative Cameron's question, it's been a trend in the area as a negotiating tool sometimes to negotiate at a top step only level for some of the bargaining units from the cities because they don't want to pay those lower wage employees that increase. And sometimes you can get your margins that way as well. And I'm not indicating that happened here, but that's happened to a number of cities. But it's very important that we look at this lower area because that's where we're recruiting, that's who we're competing with. And you're exactly right. We're going to lose all these men and women to these other organizations because we are in for a huge influx of public safety hiring in the next 5 to 10 years. And we need to be prepared for it so we can get the best on the roads for OSP. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you bringing this forward. I think it's a huge issue, and I just want to recognize that. I know that when you do make those big investments in training, it's discouraging to see that investment disappear to your competitors as such. I would note that happens in other industries as well. We see that in the construction industry quite prevalent. I support this bill, but I am a little concerned about the roll-up cost, you know, and the spending in the future that we're looking at with our economy the way it is and with our budgets the way they are right now. And, Mr. Chair, I don't know if this bill is going to have a look at Ways and Means because there is, I don't believe, a fiscal in this biennium, but I am a little bit concerned about that because we don't know what our future economy looks like right now.
Representative, we haven't scheduled for a work session yet because there was amendment language coming up, so we have not got a fiscal or revenue on this. And our good friends from the department, I don't know if they've been to any of your offices, but they've been to mine, and they have a fiscal based on the original bill, not on the amendment language, and I told them that yesterday, and they were rather surprised, which disappointed me, but now they know, and I'm sure that we'll be communicating all our information with those good people, so, and we're all worried about costs, but I think, once again, I think it's worth it, because my wife and daughter, if they're on the road, I want you guys and gals out there if they're needed, so... But I do share your concern about the money.
Mr. Chair,
I know where to find some more money, Representative.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, go ahead and respond to that, and then Representative Holden.
Yeah, if I may respond follow. Actually to that comment. If you'll notice, the amendment doesn't take effect until 2013. That was intentional. The original bill did have a delay as well, because even though it actually set a wage, base wage, at the average of those, we wanted to give the state some time to get is house in order, I guess I'll use that term, as far as working toward this goal of making sure that, they're retaining, recruiting and retaining these people. So that effective date is intentional. It allows them to go through to the second bargaining cycle. If you use a two-year bargaining, they're in bargaining now. So you would assume they'll have a 2009 to 11 contract, then they'll have an 11 to 13 contract. And by the end of that second contract, hopefully we'll all be looking at a much rosier picture than we do now. Let me make one more comment with the chairman's indulgence. I mean, obviously all of us are aware of this huge roller coaster that OSP has been on for the last 25 years. That cannot continue. We have to figure out some way for stable funding for this organization. This gives all of us, us as well as the legislature and the governor and everybody else, some time to figure out how we get to the dedicated funding or stable funding for OSP. So we're not trying to rush this in front of the, you know, the cart in front of the horse and say, you got to pay us a bunch before you figure out how we're going to get stable funding. But make most no mistake, this session we are going to be pressing for some dedicated funding, and we have to get there. Thank you.
In way, shape, or form, members, did my comment mean to imply that whether, regardless of how you vote on this bill or any other bill, that anyone up here does not think the state police are worth it? I did not mean to imply that. I just wanted to say I think they're worth it. Representative Holby, you have a follow-up, and then Representative.
Yes, I do, and thank you for clarifying that. I just want to make sure on the record that it wasn't implied that I didn't support the state police as well. I think they're critically important. I just hope that in this bill that there's nothing that gives Representative Olson any authority to pull people over on the freeways.
Yes, please, Representative.
The representative from Lane County struggles with traveling on
I-5. At least you're Colberg, right? Okay, Representative Esquivel, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I still think Representative Olson gave me a ticket in 1973 in Albany, but that's just a rumor. I think the other thing, when you look at the fiscal on this, is how many people we're losing and what we put into those people. That's going to be an offsetting factor, because if we're the farm team for someone else, then we're footing the bill to send them through training, and then they leave and go somewhere else. We're stuck with that bill. We've paid for that, and we've lost that much money, whatever we put into that individual.
Chair Schaffer, Representative Esquivel, member of the committee, I will clarify that a little bit. As we enter in a couple of years, you know what's going to happen. We're all going to be in this hiring frenzy. We're going to be, hopefully, hopefully. As we used to train, we used to have our own academy out at the coast. Send, I went through with a group of 70 in 1987. Well, now we're sending 10 to 15 through at DPSST with all the other agencies. And regardless of my personal opinion on that, it's working. But when I sit next to Andy Olson here from the Portland PD, who's also hiring a lot of people, and we start to compare salaries and benefits, I'm thinking, well, gee, I live in Portland. I'll go talk to your recruiter, and I can quit OSP in the morning and come back in the afternoon wearing a different uniform. And we've just spent all that money recruiting me, testing me, doing the background investigation for somebody else.
Representative Matthews.
Mr. Chair, and this isn't meant to be a floor speech of any type, but it is a comment, and that is that this helps us start to correcting a problem that we have in terms of recruitment and retention. But the bigger issue, I think, for a lot of these men and women also is working for OSP, it is a prideful unit and the best in the state of law enforcement, and is looked up to by everybody. But the sad thing is that the reality is they do have to move. Sometimes they don't get the choice of the mission. They can be relocated. And the bigger point of that is the safety. This society is becoming a little more violent and a lot more disturbing, and our state troopers are out there oftentimes on their own with cover 20, 30 miles away. And so we do have to find a way, and I know everybody's charged with that, to make this a safer job for them as they compare to their other folks making more money in other communities that have more cover available to them. So that's just a point of mine, and I think this starts fixing the problem, but we have a long way to go really get this done.
Thank you, folks. We're we're not working this today. We're going to get the fiscal revenue summaries, and then we will be coming back.
Thank you,
gentlemen, very much. It's a good bill. I hope it passes. Would anyone else like to testify to this bill today? All right, thank you very much. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2501 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2570. Okay. Harold Flashman and Mike Dandy? Is that correct?
No.
Whenever you're ready, gentlemen.
Chair Schopfer and the House of Business Labor Committee. My name is Harold Flushman. I work at OHSU as a registered nurse. I'm also a bargaining chair for the Oregon Nurse Association. I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 2570, which would designate one position to OHSU Board of Directors for the person representing employees. I believe that a small change to the composition of the OHSU Board would create a significant positive impact to the employees of Portland's large employer. It is important to have members of the OHSU board with strong business credentials. It can be just as important to have a board member that can speak to the services that are being provided. Who would be more qualified than the workers who provide these services? Most workers at OHSU stay at OHSU because they believe the services they provide to Oregonians. OHSU is a special place to work in the sense of important accomplishment and service not found elsewhere. OHSU has a mission to Oregonians to provide health care, education, and research. The new board member would bring a point of view from the workers that carry out that work. Many of the current board members have a business, non-health care background. The new board member would have the additional perspective to ensure that OHSU continues to provide the services to Oregonians. I believe that a board member representing the workers would provide a unique input into the work of OHSU Board of Directors. Any questions?
Oh, we'll let this next young man talk, and then we'll open it up to questions.
Chair Schopfer and members of the House Business and Labor Committee, my name is Mike Bandy, and I work at OHSU, and I am the president of Ask Me Local 328, OHSU Employees Union. I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 2570. This bill will designate an existing OHSU Board of Directors seat as a seat for a labor representative. OHSU and Ask Me Local 328 have enjoyed a productive and collaborative relationship over the years. We work as a team in our workplace partnership initiative, labor management committees, and in process improvement programs. Ask Me Local 328 seeks to strengthen that relationship through this bill. We feel that giving voice to the employees through a labor seat would strengthen the relationship between employees and management, as they will be working closer together. The experience of the employees of Portland's largest employer should allow for better decision-making from the board. ASME and ONA have a vested interest in making OHSU successful and the employer of choice in the Portland area. ASME and ONA feel strongly that the seat for labor should be included in ORS 353.040 to ensure the stability and long-term continuity of the voice of the employees of OHSU on the board. The students of OHSU have had a seat on the board since its inception, while labor has not. The student board member has therefore been involved in making decisions that affect the largest population of OHSU labor, with little or no knowledge of the workplace issues our employees experience every day. It is time for the largest population at OHSU to help move OHSU ahead with its knowledge, dedication, and heart. ASME and ONA feel that we have unique issues and concerns that only a labor person can properly understand, appreciate, and articulate. ASME and ONA have come together to urge the passage of this bill. Thank you, Chair Schaffler and members of the committee. We are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, before I do that, I want to just share some thoughts with you guys, and I've shared it with your union reps and lobbyists down here. I'm saying some comments to the nice people from OHS too, and I'm rather conflicted because I'm a former union member, and my wife, Dr. Sinceri, is alum from OHSU. She's a dentist, the best dentist in the state, for that winning smile. See, Dr. Sinceri. Anyway, is that against the law for me to do that?
Probably.
I'm violating everything under the books.
Are you anyway, going to add the address and phone number as well, Representative Shop?
Well, my good friend Alan Brown sold a lot of tires sitting right here in his chair. God bless Alan Brown and Les Schwab Tires, too. Anyway, I agree with you completely and this concept that there should be a member of labor on this board. And my question, I want the governor to appoint a labor representative to this board. And I think he should, and I hope he's listening, and I'm sure he has a great dentist and good tires, but I want him to hear this, that I think that's what should happen, and I want you good folks and your people and your members to go to that office and make that humble, reasonable request. My question to you is, with the fact that there's a dedicated seat for a student member of the board, have you, and the good people from OHSU, I'm asking you to come up and respond to the same question. Have you seen or experienced a demand from doctors, dentists, nurses, and other professionals who graduate from that wonderful, great institution to have a specific carved out seat on that board for them? Have you seen that happening as a result of having a dedicated seat on the board to students?
Chair Schaffler, even though that might be the case, what we're advocating is that an outside and not an employee are part of OHSU be a member of the board. While I'm not privy to any other organizations or entities up at OHSU that have requested the desire to be on the board, I can't answer that.
All right. That's fine. Thank you. And by the way, the answer to any question of I do not know is one of the best answers to any question ever, because it's real, and I respect that. And we don't get enough of that in this building. Have you seen that happen, the slippery slope concept?
I have not personally myself.
Okay.
I guess we'd have to come to this committee to be reevaluated if that was to
right.
happen.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions of these gentlemen? All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we're not going to be hearing working this bill today either.
No, Mr. Chair. We're waiting for the amendments.
Yes.
Or the fiscal amendments.
Yes. Thank you very much. Now I'd like to call the good people from OHSU, Brian Behringer and Amy Wason.
Mm-hmm.
Waxon? Wason. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That'll be a conflict here. I'm curious.
I want you to know you're in front of a friendly chair today. Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
And
Chair.
And my wife wouldn't have it any other way. And by the way, my household and thousands of households, I think the entire state, obviously, benefits from OHSU. So I just want to get that on the record.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Is your wife here today? Today is ODA Lobby Day.
My wife today is up there doing great work.
Somebody has to work.
That's
okay.
Exactly right, Representative. I do my best. All right, go ahead. Whoever wants to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian Behringer, your Director of Government Relations at OHSU, and I am going to attempt to step in real quickly for our board chair, Keith Thompson, who couldn't be here today. You have his full written testimony in front of you, and I just wanted to pull out three comments that I knew he wanted to make. Let me start by saying that OHSU management and its board absolutely would welcome an addition of an individual with labor experience on our board. Not only have we indicated that fact to both legislative leaders and the governor in the past, but we would be more than happy to join our labor colleagues to specifically ask the governor to nominate a representative of labor to fill one of the two slots that will be coming open on the board in the next few months. We would also be more than happy to see the existing statute altered to make labor expertise one of the areas of experience that the governor is directed to consider in populating the board, and that's in the statute 353-0403 sub B. We do not, however, support the current bill or the Dash 1 amendments for two simple reasons. One, they limit the ability of future governors and the legislature to look at each board opening on a case-by-case basis to ascertain what type of experience and expertise is needed to supplement the skill sets of the board members already on the board at that particular time. And two, they set a precedent that could lead to future boards that are a confederation of individual constituencies rather than a board that is singularly focused on helping one of Oregon's most complex organizations do the best job possible of carrying out its statutory obligations. I'll let you read the rest of the testimony, and I'll turn it over to Ms. Wason right now.
Good morning. For the record, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Amy Wason. I'm Vice President and General Counsel at OHSU and appreciate the opportunity to make remarks to you this morning. As Brian Behringer mentioned, we oppose House Bill 2570, which would amend the 353-040 to increase the board size and dedicate a board seat to a person representing one of our collective bargaining units. We are aware of the Dash 1 amendment and are of the view that it makes some positive improvements to the bill, but it doesn't address all of our concerns. Similar to our chair, Keith Thompson, I want to reiterate that we would certainly welcome expertise on the board in the area of labor, and there are two positions which should be opening up in the fall, and we would certainly welcome the opportunity to, together with our unions, make a recommendation to the governor to install that kind of expertise on the board. And then the other point that's very important for us to mention is that our remarks today are not directed to labor particularly. Our collective bargaining units at OHSU are hugely important to us, and we frankly feel really good about our relationship with them. We have a lot of constituencies up there, and the concerns we have would be the same if we were talking about a dedicated position for other constituencies, be it a patient's rights constituency or the OMA or some other group. We feel that OHSU is and really must be for all Oregonians. So I'm the general counsel, and it's not going to come as a surprise that I come with legal thinking relative to this issue. And I have four areas of concern, the first being boards, corporate boards, and the OHSU boards the members of the boards are charged with a fiduciary duty to kind of always act in the best interests of the corporation. Corporate boards are not like committees such as this committee, where each of you is basically charged with coming and representing the views of your respective constituencies. Rather, corporate boards, their focus and under the law is to think in terms of the best interests of the corporation. And the Dash 1 amendments, so we would have a concern that were a position dedicated to a particular constituency, that individual would feel charged with representing that interest in that conversation. While the Dash 1 amendments improve that because they don't require that the new member be an employee of OHSU, it still is it still has the concern that the Dash 1 amendment mandates the board member that they represent the interests of employees as distinct from coming to the table and representing the interests of the corporation. Second point, conflict of interest. The actual bill mandates that the member be a member of our collective bargaining units as distinct from just a member of labor. As you no doubt are aware, we on a regular basis contract with those collective bargaining units, and that to the extent that that is to provide some influence or input in relative to that discussion, that would amount to a conflict of interest for that individual. Thirdly, I'm kind of back to kind of basic role of the corporate board. Boards stay out of operations, and the discussions with labor are operations, and those are generally handled by the people involved in day-to-day management. Fourth, and this speaks a little bit to your comments, Chair Schaffler, about our dedicated positions currently. Those have been a part of the OHSU statute since the time of its formation, and the genesis of that, as reflected in the legislative history, is that the OUS position recognized that the legislature imposed statutory obligations on OHSU to, for example, coordinate our academic programs with those of OUS. So there was a certain mission-related accountability that they felt it important to have the OUS slot there. And the student member is kind of a continuation of a tradition that to include in educational institutions a student member by way of promoting the educational experience. Again, that's a slot that's focused on the mission, not on a particular constituency. Two final, for those reasons, we oppose the for those reasons, in addition to what our chair voices, we oppose the proposed legislation. Two final comments. As noted earlier, we would welcome the expertise. The statute currently calls out areas of expertise that are to be included on the board, and they include healthcare, education, research, engineering, technology, and economic and business development. We would suggest that it would be appropriate and certainly helpful to add labor or related experience to that list of expertise, as distinct from identifying a particular slot for a particular board member. And then again, let me just conclude by saying this is not about this is not an anti-labor message. And if the governor concluded that a labor person was appropriate, we would welcome it. Indeed, we'd certainly promote it. And we just have a concern that with legislation such as is proposed in either version, there's a suggestion that that person is there to represent their constituency. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. There are a lot of questions here. I don't know how many years all that's been in statute. In those years, though, in light of the fact that there is some encouragement to appoint people of specific experience and the fact that there's a dedicated seat for students, how many times have different constituencies approached this body or you all and asked specifically that one of their members of their constituency, whatever it is, be appointed to the board? How many times has that request been made?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would need to go back and do some surveying to give you an exact answer, but what I can say right now is that through the current president and the previous president, I'm aware that at least the faculty has asked at least on one occasion. So, but we can do some research to catalog official requests or unofficial requests.
Right. And my reason I ask is we're worried that, and I share those concerns. I think they're valid and reasonable and rational, because we don't want a bunch of people bickering. We want to make sure that this institution runs really well and continues to provide the great service and education and be quite frank with you, jobs that they are. Okay, Representative Esquivel, then Representative Holvey.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I asked you a question yesterday. How many people of labor have ever served on this board?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in looking to try to answer your question from yesterday, at this point I haven't found anyone that has a specific labor background that has served on the board.
That's like none.
That's like none.
Representative Holby, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious in listening to your testimony. I guess my question is, do any of the OHSU board members receive remuneration of any kind from OHSU?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holvey and members of the committee, no, they do not.
Thank you.
No per diem, no stipend, no anything.
Mr. Chairman, no per diem, no stipend, no anything.
Thank you. Representative Witt, Matthews, then Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly appreciate your willingness to add a labor perspective. And Brian, your grandfather would be proud of you. His grandfather, Mr. Chairman, was a long-time elected labor official. So
God bless
him. And salt of the earth individual too.
Thank you.
I understand your concern about adding additional board seats, and I'm sympathetic. And quite frankly, I think, you know, one labor seat out of 10 is probably better than one out of 11 anyways. So, but it is my understanding that your board right now is comprised of, half of it is comprised of individuals that come from two corporations. And if that's true, then I think... more diversity would be a good thing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, we agree, but I would also just remind the committee that the decision lies with the governor, and through various governors over the creation of the OHSU Public Corp, which was in 1995, we have at times been asked to submit names. We've been at times asked to review names, but at the very end of the day, the governor and then the Senate confirmation process is who supply the board.
You know, the governor represents a constituency, and that's us. And everyone in this room agrees that there should be, or at least sees the value of, a labor representative on this board. So I think it's pretty clear what needs to be done here, regardless of who the governor is, regardless of whether we have the votes for this bill or not. I just want to stress that, and I know they're listening. All right, Representative Matthews, then, Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Witt had touched on the point I was going to ask, or the question I was going to ask, which is the current makeup of the board. How many of those folks are from related fields? How many of those have related backgrounds? And how, you know, if this bill is created to create some diversity amongst the board, how much diversity do you have right now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, members of the committee, we have, I can list them with our board chair is Keith Thompson. He's a retired VP of Intel. Our vice chair is Scott Gibson. He's a chairman of Gibson Enterprises. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but high tech. We have Kirby Diaz, who is our OUS member. She's a principal in Austin Capital. We have Roman Hernandez, who is a attorney with the Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt firm. And we have Joe Robertson, who's, of course, our president. We have, well, he's just resigned from the board. We have a student member, and he's actually been a School of Medicine graduate student. Jay Waldron, who is another lawyer from the Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt firm. We have Charles Wilhoit, who is the principal and director of Willamette Management Associates. Meredith Wilson, who is a civic leader and community volunteer. She's a co-owner of Wilson Cattle Company and located in North Powder, Eastern Oregon. And we have John Yunker, who is a former DAS, course director.
Former what?
Department of Administrative Services.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you got, I hope my counting's right, you got four corporate people and two attorneys. That's six people that, okay. Representative Barton, then Representative Kinnamer.
Mr. Chair, I pass.
Okay, Representative Kinnamer, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was reflecting on the 1995 bill because I was here. And I don't remember some of that very well, but I do remember the interesting discussion that you've brought up today about trying to find someone who would be an advocate for the system rather than an advocate for their cause. And I remember being struck, and at the time my initial input was we should have a student on there, and they should be an advocate for the students. And with some time, I began to understand the importance that, no, they need to represent the institution and its betterment, and there needs to be a student perspective. But that's a difficult balance to find, and I just thought I'd pass that piece of history on, because I think that's the recommendation, and I think it also has proven to work well.
And Representative, I completely agree with you. The students, the faculty, the workers all benefit from the system, but I don't think you can separate our natural constituency no matter who you are. If you're an attorney, you're gonna keep in mind your constituency of your workforce that you come from, and you can't separate the two. And I'm a laborer; I've been my whole life. I cannot abandon the fact that I worked the shovel for decades, and I'm grateful for that. And I wouldn't want Representative Cameron to forget that he is a restaurateur, and I wouldn't want
Representative Mr. Chair, I can't forget the days I washed dishes either.
And
my feet hurt, and when my boots were wet and my hands were shriveled, and as just because I'm a business person doesn't mean I don't remember what it feels like.
And I never mean to imply that. Besides, I've spent many happy days washing dishes too. And Representative Barton can't forget the fact that he is an attorney.
Not a Schwabi though, Mr.
And Representative Matthews can't forget that he's a firefighter.
Yeah. What firm is that?
We cannot separate ourselves from who we are and what we have. So I struggle with the argument that all these wonderful people that are on the board are somehow above remembering who and what they are, and to think that a person from labor couldn't be as objective as any one of these nice, wonderful people. I'm struggling. I am interested in seeing this language where the recommendations of where the expertise people should come from. I'm interested in looking at that, too. But, Representative, in no way, shape, or form did I mean to imply that you were just a big shot driving on a fancy car with a cell phone and never worked a day in your life. Everyone implies such a horrible thing to my good friend. With all that, Representative Kenemer, I've already called on you. Anybody else have any comments or questions to these good, wonderful people from this great institution? And we're not working this today, as you know. Okay. Seeing none, I really appreciate you coming down here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And pray to God the ODA doesn't come in and make the same request, because then I won't be so friendly.
Mr. Chairman, on that note, I'd just like for equal time to note to Dr. Terry Isom, a phenomenal root canal specialist, is going to be here today. He happens to be my son-in-law.
Oh, God bless him. Good for him. I look forward to
what
meeting
a great
him.
Subject.
I just thought some of you might be needing some help.
Well, Representative, I won't argue with that.
Endodontist, you know, what an opportunity.
Anyone else would like to speak to this bill today? All right, thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2570, and I would entertain a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Barton to vote on House Bill 2540. Representative Cameron, my good, hard-working friend, Representative Cameron.
Motion, please.
To suspend the rules to allow Representative Barton to vote on House Bill 2540.
Representative Cameron moves we suspend the rules to allow Representative Barton to move a bill vote on House Bill 2540. Is there any opposition to that motion?
Is he going to vote affirmatively?
We can't ask that question, Representative. Oh. That would not be fair. Any further comments or opposition? I see no opposition. So moved. Representative, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you very much. With that, is there anything for the good of the order? All right, we're adjourned.